Warning, this podcast may contain graphic violence, sexual themes, and bad language. If our language offends you, we apologize, but we do not give a fuck. Be mindful of your kids listening.
The Evil Never Dies Podcast. This is the Evil Never Dies podcast. I'm Brett, and I am here with my lovely co-host, Carl.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
What's going on, everybody? Since it was Ronnie James Dio's birthday yesterday, we're going to do a little deep dive into his career and life a little bit here. What's first music you heard from Ronnie?
The Dio band.
Dio?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, first I heard was when he was with Rainbow. They used to play The Man on the Silver Mountain on the radio all the time when I was a kid. That was probably like 77, 78.
Nah, I would never have, wasn't around in those days listening to music, so you know, my stuff all comes much later, but of course I backdate everything. And probably, I guess the first album I bought would have been Dream Evil, because that came out in 87.
Okay.
And then, of course, I already had heard Rainbow in the Dark and all the radio songs. But as far as buying brand new in the store, I remember buying Dream Evil.
Cool. I had that album, too, on vinyl.
Yeah, mine's actually up in the wall in the other room. I put that up in a picture of Ronnie, and I think there's another album I got up in there too. So I've got a corner.
I got his tribute shirt on.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
I'll show you the back. See the back?
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot of
best $50 I ever spent. I got a program with it and all kinds of stuff from when they did his, thing out there in LA.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. But
I don't have a whole lot of Ronnie merchandise. He's not one of those guys that went back and sold stuff like a lot of bands. You know, if you didn't catch it on the tour, you just didn't get it, really.
Yeah, he wasn't no Gene Simmons.
Yeah, maybe he should have been.
Maybe. But anyway,
just saying, you know, Metallica still sell shirts from the 80s, and they look just like the same shirt. So I think that kind of merchandising.
Yeah.
Ronnie wasn't into it, but they've certainly merchandised after he passed away a lot.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah. But anyway, he was born July 10th, 1942. And if you don't know it, his real name is Ronald James Patavona.
I could never say that. So
I've been practicing it.
Yeah, I never knew how to pronounce his name.
But he was born in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that.
And I guess his dad was in the army. Before he was born, they lived in Cortland, New York. And his dad got transferred there. So that's where he basically grew up at. And I guess growing up, he listened to a lot of opera music.
That makes sense, because he had a very opera voice, you know, for metal.
Well, he didn't start out as a singer. Do you know that?
I think he played the horn, didn't he?
Yeah, he played the trumpet.
Yeah.
From when he was 5 years old all the way up till, he probably could still play it.
Yeah.
And
I think he played bass as well. So yeah, he was a musician.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a singer like a lot of the bands.
Exactly. Yep. And his first group was the Vegas Kings. Do you ever hear any of their music?
I think it was sort of swing music, was it not?
Yep. really swingy for sure. Then after that, they changed the name to Ronnie and the Red Rumblers, then Ronnie and the Red Caps.
Yeah.
And then when he's that was in 1957. And then
That goes back. That's crazy to think.
Yeah, I know. 1957. Long ass time ago. And then when he graduated from high school, he actually got a scholarship to go to Juilliard. You know that?
Did not know that. No.
Yeah. But he turned it down because he wanted to play rock and roll, and they weren't a big rock and roll thing back then. You know, they were more classical and all that. So, but he didn't take the scholarship because he wanted to play rock and roll music. And then after that, he attended the University of Buffalo. He was going to be a pharmacist.
Interesting.
Just think if he didn't do good in his music career, he'd be behind a pharmacy window somewhere.
Yeah, working at Walgreens.
That's crazy. But
No, he kind of looked like he could have been a pharmacist. Who knows? Put some glasses on him. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. But anyway, after that, he the Ronnie and the Red Caps and all that, they sort of merged. And in 1967, they started calling themselves the Electric Elves.
Yeah, that's when I started to be a little more knowledgeable about.
Yeah, and then after that, they changed the name a couple times. They finally ended up just changing it to Elf.
Yes.
And they opened up for Deep Purple a lot.
Ah, I guess that's where Ritchie Blackmore first encountered him then.
Yep, exactly. I was just going to get into that. He saw him and got with him and asked him what he was doing. And I guess Ritchie Blackmore said that that's the reason he quit Deep Purple.
Because
he met Ronnie and
I think he was a little unhappy.
Ideas and stuff. And
I don't think he was real happy with Coverdale and Glenn Hughes either, because they were taking Deep Purple in a different direction, and that was his band.
Yeah. So he decided to disband it.
Yes. Well, no, they didn't disband. They actually kept going without Blackmore.
Well, yeah, but yeah, he wasn't in on it.
Yeah, they did an album without him, and it just wasn't very good. But I know we're jumping off a subject, but just, you know, I thought Burn was the best Deep Purple album they ever did. And I think Blackmore really showed without the rest of them what he could do. And, you know, Coverdale was a kid. Nobody, you know, he just found him in a club somewhere.
Yeah.
So it could have really went well, but unfortunately it did not. So I guess having Dio and Elf on tour opened the door to something else for him.
Exactly. They ended up making three albums together, studio albums, Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, Rising, and Long Live Rock and Roll. And then they did a live album called On Stage, which was that was actually a pretty good live album, actually. And then they did a couple of live albums out of Germany, too.
Yeah, back then there were a lot of semi-bootleg albums that were coming out off of soundboards and such that didn't get released everywhere.
So he, I guess he was beating heads with Blackmore, so.
That wasn't hard, apparently. I don't think nobody could work with Blackmore.
Yeah, that's what I've
always heard. To this day.
That's what I've always heard, too. And so he left them, and then one day he was in the Rainbow in Los Angeles and started talking to Tony Iommi, and he was in the same spot as Ronnie was, because they just fired Ozzy and he didn't have a singer. So Yomi invited him over to his place in Los Angeles, and he had a little studio there, and they wrote Children of the Sea in the first meeting.
Well, at some point, Geezer Butler actually had quit and left too. So I'm not sure how all that core.
And that was what started the recording on the Heaven and Hell album. And then they went, Bill Ward quit from Sabbath.
Geezer came back after a few months.
I wonder, who did they have playing bass then?
It was the keyboard player.
Oh, was he playing the bass too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where they first, I'm pretty sure. Let me do a little check on that. They may have brought somebody in that.
But Geezer recorded the album though, didn't he?
Yes.
He just didn't go on the tour. Part of the tour. Yeah,
there was a lot going on with Sabbath prior to that, because Ozzy had quit and they brought in some other singer called Dave Walker, I believe the name was. And then Ozzy came back. Then I guess they fired Ozzy. I don't know. Who knows at that stage? I just know that Black Sabbath was in a really, really, really sad situation there.
Yeah,
here we go. So Geezer left in September of 79. And Dio himself, from Dio, actually, he said that they hired some bass player named Craig Gruber, who played an Elf, who was assisting on an album. And that's when Jeff Nichols came in, who was hired to play keyboards, and he actually played bass in the very early days of the Heaven and Hell recording.
Huh.
And Jeff Nichols stuck around with Sabbath all the way up to near the end.
Yep. Then they came out with Mob Rules. And that's when Vinny Appice came on board with Ronnie. And
actually, I think Bill Ward didn't even do the Heaven and Hell tour.
No.
Vinny actually joined for then, was on the tour.
Yep. And then in 82, they were mixing the Live Evil album.
Oh, that's when everything went to hell.
Yeah, that's when everything went to hell. I guess they had the engineer started complaining that he'd mix a track and be up all night mixing a track and have it laid down, and then Ronnie would come in and change the whole thing during the day when he was gone.
Yeah, I think Ronnie had denied it, and Iommi and Geezer. So I don't think we ever got the full story, but that's when things went to hell for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, over the recording of that live album, which I don't even know why they were doing a live album, other than I think Ozzy put out Speak of the Devil, which was all Black Sabbath tunes. And maybe they decided, well, maybe we need to put out a live album.
Yeah.
But it didn't really care for those three Rainbow albums with Dio. I've, listened to them for years. And every time I do it, I don't really get too caught into them. And they sound very dated, especially now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Compared to even some of the older Deep Purple albums, they just have a real dated sound to them.
Yep, I don't think they had the best studio to record that in.
They do sound, the mix on them sound a little off. Of course, that's plagued other bands. It plagued Black Sabbath a few albums later.
They do have a couple of different mixes. Like they recorded a session in New York, and they recorded a session in LA, and then they recorded just a third session.
Well, I know I've got, go to my,
they do sound a little different when you listen to them.
I know. I think it's Rising. I've got an edition that's got like all kinds of different mixes on it
and live stuff and all that.
Let me do a little pull this up here. Because I was listening to this earlier, and like I said, I've kind of listened to the Rainbow all weekend, and I just Yeah, see,
just not feeling it, huh?
This is the deluxe edition of Rising, and they've got Terror Woman, which is a New York mix, and then they got the Los Angeles mix on it.
Yep.
Then they got what they call the rough mix.
I think that's the one that's actually on the album.
It might be.
I'm not for sure.
Stargazer actually, the rough mix of it's got this real funkified keyboard.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty damn cool. I just listened to that the other day.
You know what I think they were missing? At least what Blackmore was missing? And that's John Lord's organ. And I know, that was Deep Purple, but it just...
Yeah.
I think that organ that Deep Purple had made such an impact that once Blackmore left, it just was... He was sort of missing something. And I don't... You know, all the keyboard players that played in Rainbow, I know it... That's another problem. The band switched members so much that you really didn't have a collective band.
So did Ronnie's band, too. He had all kinds of people.
Well, not in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, he had the same band forever until 87. So, and even then, it was just Vivian Campbell left and Craig Goldie came in and Vinny and Jimmy Bain stuck around for a bit. But I don't think any of these Rainbow albums had the same players on them. I know the original, what was it called? Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. They actually used the guys in Elf on it.
I was reading that.
Yeah. So.
The bass player, I think, and the keyboardist.
By the time The Rising came out, Jimmy Bain had actually joined the band, who of course would play with Ronnie, in the Dio band. But just not a lot of consistency, at Blackmore, apparently. I've heard, and I'll just come out and say it, I've heard from too many sources, the guy is just an ass and is hard to work with. Everybody has said that. So
Now I think he just goes around playing like
Scarborough Fair Renaissance music. Yeah, it does. Yeah,
the traveling minstrel show or whatever the hell it is.
Now, for a fact, I know Joe Lynn Turner tried to do like a reunion of Rainbow and he wasn't interested. And I also heard that Ronnie tried to get something together with Blackmore and they actually talked and it sounded pretty favorable, but it never went anywhere. So
I didn't know that.
Yes. So several of the former members of Rainbow have tried. Now, of course, he did put out some albums later with different singers and different people. One of them was actually released under the name Richie Blackmore's Rainbow again. And later down the line, it wasn't good music. It just seemed kind of, I don't know. So I know we're delving into Richie Blackmore, but you kind of have to.
Yeah, because
if it hadn't have been for Blackmore, Ronnie probably would have never met Iommi at the Rainbow.
Exactly.
So Blackmore played a big role in a lot of these guys' lives, including Ronnie's.
How'd you like to have been at that conversation?
Very interesting.
Yes, it would have. That's what I was thinking.
It was weird anyway, the way that Deep Purple just fell apart.
Yeah.
And here you go trying to start another band. And I know Rainbow and Deep Purple are compared a lot because, later down the line, I think the bass player of Deep Purple actually joined Rainbow. I think that was after Ronnie had left. And then they started making more commercial music and radio music. And
that's why Ronnie left, is because they wanted to do that. And he wanted to just, be himself and do his own thing.
Well, I was in the garage hitting my boxing bag, working out earlier, and I was playing Rainbow. I got my old stereo in the garage, by the way, my old Pioneer. It's outdated, but it still works pretty damn good. So I'm playing Rainbow, and I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and go to Heaven and Hell. And it's just like night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, the Heaven and Hell album is such just it's got to be one of my favorite albums of all time.
Mine too.
I mean, I still listen to it all the time. It's just very special to me.
It's probably in my top five.
Yes, it's definitely up there. And obviously the Rainbow albums were older and earlier, but I'm telling you, that Heaven and Hell album was just special. I mean, it's just as good as anything they ever did with Ozzy in the early days.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, honestly, I've always sort of felt, I mean.
Oh, I've always, I like the Dio Sabbath better anyway.
I mean, it's hard to say that when you look at Paranoid and War Pigs and Iron Man and the song Black Sabbath, that's sort of what started heavy metal. But yeah. After that, Black Sabbath.
I'm just saying the sound, just Ronnie's voice, you know.
Ronnie fit better, just like I think Ozzy was better solo. Exactly. I think it was unfortunate that the Ronnie and Iommi and Butler broke up, because there's no telling what they could have come up with in the years to come.
Exactly.
And again, taking nothing against the Dio band, because Dio, the band, is also one of my favorite bands. I mean, of course, it's a little more commercial than the Sabbath albums, but like the song Rock and Roll Children, that song is still just really, the video especially. Yeah. I just love that video. It just has the aura of the 80s to it, and how the heavy metal kids were. And that's sort of what the video's about.
Yeah.
Getting bullied and made fun of and sticking together. And love that video and love that song. But cover the Mob Rules a little bit. I mean, it's definitely, it's almost a heavier album than Heaven and Hell.
Yeah, it was way heavier.
I think Vinny had a lot to do with that. You know, nothing against Bill Ward, but I think Vinny Appice was just a heavier heavy metal drummer than Bill was, especially at that point.
I still love Bill Ward, though.
Yeah, but I think Bill was, you know, he had a lot of problems with drugs and alcohol and just was sort of fading and needed a break. And Vinny came in there just like a lightning bolt, sort of kind of like Scott Travis did with Judas Priest on Painkiller, you know, just kaboom, you know, just like, what the hell? So Mob Rules is another album that's very special.
Yeah,
I don't know that I like it as good as Heaven and Hell, but it's just...
I'm pretty equal on it, man. I love them both.
They are pretty equal.
It sounded good. It was a good recording they did on them both. And yeah, it was awesome.
Definitely. Again, it's sad to think what, you know, that they broke up. And you know, obviously Sabbath continued on and Ronnie started the Dio band with kept Vinny with him and Jimmy Bain that was in Rainbow with him came back. And I have no idea where they found Vivian Campbell at offhand. He was just some teenage, Uber kid, you know, that came along, and he was definitely
a guitar virtuoso or whatever.
Yes. Something beeping on your end. Okay, I thought those were the computers.
People calling me that I can't talk to right now.
You're in high demand. High demand you are.
Oh, I'm probably going to be in trouble because I didn't answer, but oh well.
Yeah. But anyway. That Live Evil album that came out that broke the band up, or at least got Ronnie and Vinny out of there.
I think that sounded like shit myself, man. I think they could have found a better recording.
Maybe there was the mix. You know, they were apparently all arguing over the mix. Well, they didn't get the mix right. I always heard that Geezer Butler was trying to throw too much bass in it, is what Ronnie's issue was.
Well, and they keep saying that Ronnie kept changing the tracks, turning his vocals up louder.
Trying to drown out Geezer, maybe.
Maybe, who knows?
But, I don't know. I mean, I just not really enjoy hearing Ronnie sing Iron Man and War Pigs. It didn't really fit. Yeah. Whereas some of the singers in the future Sabbath had sounded
a lot
better.
He did
a
good job when he did it, though.
He did.
He did it his way.
He did. But it goes back to, you know, I'm very I'm receptacle of people changing singers and accepting would be the word, like when Ripper Owens went to Priest, and you know, I thought Ronnie being in Black Sabbath fit better than Ozzy did, but sometimes, just sometimes, maybe some of these bands should have changed their names. I don't know. I mean, of course, Sabbath ended up having 5 lead singers total over the course of their.
Yeah, some of them were pretty, I don't know.
Well, they had some, Glenn Hughes is one of the best singers there is, but he's not a Black Sabbath singer. And that album, you know, yeah, it was not a Black Sabbath album.
And that other guy that they had,
well, they had the Tony Martin came in later. They had
what was that guy's name?
From Deep Purple.
Yeah, he said they had another guy named Gillen too. His last name was Gillen, but it wasn't spelled the same. I forget what his.
He was a singer on Badlands.
Oh yeah,
Ray, that was his name.
Yeah, he ended up dying or something, but
yeah. Anyway. They technically, yeah, he wasn't really, I think they recorded the album. They re-recorded it with Tony Martin on the vocals.
Hold that thought, Carl. My daughter keeps blowing up my phone, so we're going to have to do an episode 2 on Ronnie here. But stay tuned after this, everybody. I got a cool interview with Ronnie that I got off the net. So give it a listen and stay tuned next week for part 2. And we will talk at y'all later. Stay evil, everybody.
I think that it's something I would like to see more than anything you could possibly imagine. I would love to have an alien walk into this door right now. I'd love to see a UFO land on top of this building, and I wouldn't even care if they took me away. It's just so absolutely fascinating to me that we always think that we are the center of the universe, and that is so untrue. With the myriad of planets and myriad of worlds out there that house life, it's just absolutely fascinating. Yes, and I'd like to see that very much. I'm fascinated by UFOs.
But you haven't seen anything?
Yes, I have.
Okay, good. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. My close encounter happened in the state of Connecticut, in New Canaan, Connecticut, which is kind of in itself, when you think about New Canaan, which is a very religious, biblical kind of reference. We had just moved into another house, all of Rainbow. We'd moved from Los Angeles to Connecticut. And I had just come off the road, and my wife and I were putting together our new home. Things were being unpacked at the time, and it was probably, midnight. And I happened to look out the window, and I said, the moon looks awfully big. I said, Wendy, that wasn't out there a minute ago, that moon. She looked and said, oh, it must have been. Packing one. Okay. So I looked a few minutes later, and it was bigger. And it was bigger and bigger and coming closer and closer and closer and closer. I thought, oh, my God, this is it. The big one. I was so excited. As it got closer, we saw a car coming. Where we lived was kind of in a foresty area. So one lone car coming down a hill. And as this car was coming down, it was just about to intersect this light. And I thought, he's going to take this car away. This car is now going to shoot up into this, whatever this thing may be. And I was, with bated breath. And the car got to the intersection point, and suddenly it went out. But it didn't go out as though you would take a flame, blow the flame out, where there's an afterglow. It was as if someone had taken a black curtain and gone, and off it went. I thought, I know that was a presence of a UFO. Mm-hmm. And we both were, the next day in the newspaper, 20 or 25 people saw the same thing and then heard a large explosion with a light after it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just me, and I know it was that. I mean, I am absolutely positive that it was mm-hmm. that. No, I've never been taken away, and I don't want to be taken away that way. I don't want needles to be inserted in me in bad places, but I would love to see something like that, really would.